We are speaking this morning, this evening, if you're a Coast Insider, no telling what time it is, with Josh Reeves. His website is theglobalreality.com, and his excellent DVD is The Lost Secrets of Ancient America. Quick correction here regarding the Stooges film. Thank you, Chris, for pointing this out. The numbers look the same when you're myopic. It's Termites of 1938. And I said 1936. Wrong. And the, is it Heredity or is it Environment? That's from a 1935 little short film called Hoi Polloi. So there you go. Hey, I messed up. So what? All right. We'll be, now it's unmessed up. We'll be back with Josh Reeves in just a moment. Stand by. This is Coast to Coast AM. John B. Wells in with you tonight. When you look at, when you watch Josh Reeves' DVD, the DVD, his film, can you call it a film? You call it DVD? That seems a little cold. Anyway, it's a wonderful DVD, The Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 1, suggesting, of course, that there are going to be other volumes. If you're anything like me and you watch something, it gets you thinking. And then you stop paying attention for a second. It's like, watch this. Just plan to spend some time with his work, because there's so much there that if you sit and it's long, you get a lot on this DVD. It'll just almost make your head explode. It's absolutely unbelievable. And I can't remember which part, Josh, in your film the swastika appeared. It's toward the beginning in one of these digs. Where some of the relics left from the giants were there, something had been shaped into a swastika. Does that come to mind rapidly?
Yeah, absolutely. That was at the Spiro Mounds in Spiro, Oklahoma, and they found a red-headed giant skeleton there in full armor, and in one of the mounds they found an artifact that was in the possession of the University of Arkansas and then disappeared yet again, and it was a vase with a swastika made of serpents painted on it, and in the middle of this swastika, it had what we would call the Maltese cross. And this was a thousands and thousands of year old artifact. We also have seen this same similar symbol with the snakes being found in other sites like Moundville, Alabama, where the Smithsonian acquired over 300,000 artifacts that have never seen the light of day. If you go to the Moundville, Alabama Museum, as I did, you'll see there for yourself, as well as the Spiro Mound Museum, you will not see any of the artifacts, the actual artifacts found at these sites. At Moundville, they had a few. At Spiro, very few. They were all recreations. But if you go to the greatest museums in the world, the Louvre in Paris, or any of the big museums in England or Amsterdam, you can go all over the world and see these artifacts. But if you go to the actual sites where they came from in the United States, you can't see anything. And as I talk about in the film, you know, that really gave me the impression after seeing this, not at just one place, but at multiple places, it really gave me that thought and that impression of, you know, how a criminal would try to hide his tracks. I mean, if you're a criminal trying to hide your tracks, does it make more sense to hide all of your evidence and dump it all in one place, or to scatter it out through various locations, making it hard to piece together? And that's really what I think is going on with a lot of these sites, because you find copper, you know, it scattered throughout mound sites throughout the United States. And when it's analyzed, it all traces back to these copper mines in Michigan where ancient copper mining was going on thousands of years ago. I mean, it's just the evidence just stacks up and stacks up more and more as you look at it. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, again, the Phoenicians, the Canaanites, that whole area seems to be where these giants came from. We detail that in full in the film. We show you how far it goes back to. We even show DNA evidence of the mound builders pertaining to haplogroup X that the mound builder descendants have in their bloodlines that has traced back to the hills of Galilee, which was Amorite territory in that time. So we have DNA proof and DNA evidence. It does exist that connects these giants to the Middle East and to the mound-building cultures that they seeded and, again, as I said earlier, set up the tribal structure of that mirrored that exact tribal structure of the Middle East.
Wow. You know, it's very interesting that the swastika of snakes was discovered in Oklahoma. I'm looking here at a thing called insigne.org. Thanks, Chuck, for the heads up on this. I researched a little bit. INSIGNE.org, and it says, first line says, most collectors are aware of the fact that from the 1920s to the late 1930s, the shoulder patch of the 45th Infantry Division was a yellow swastika on a red square. And then dropping down just a little bit, for the first 15 years of its existence as a division, members of the 45th Division proudly wore on their left shoulder an ancient good luck symbol, the swastika in yellow on a red square in the background. But when the swastika was adopted by Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party in Germany during the late 30s, it became an odious symbol and was abandoned in the fall of 1938 as the insignia of the 45th Division. And they opted for a Thunderbird instead. So it's like we got termites in 1938, maybe swastikas of 1938 as well.
Well, that Thunderbird as well is also Masonic in nature as well. That Thunderbird actually stems from the Masonic double-headed eagle. So they went from one Masonic symbol to another.
Isn't that extraordinary? It just... I'll tell you, former President Harry S. Truman was absolutely correct. The only thing that's new in this world is the history that you don't know. It's perfect. It's genius. Going back to this iridium that you mentioned earlier, and the authorities seeking to make it into a wonderful power source, I'm thinking, wow, free energy. It's like, well, yeah, all energy is free. It's a matter of harnessing it or storing it and then turning it off and on when you want to. What are some of these hidden technologies that you've looked into? You know, free energy, that's kind of been the rage for the last few years. I haven't seen it demonstrated to me personally and found it to be entirely free. Have your studies and research led you to suggest that there is possibly a free energy device that no one in authority wants us to ever have?
Oh, I think there's absolutely evidence to support that. I mean, you go back and you look at, of course, the most well-known stuff, the works of Nikola Tesla. That's pretty well known. I mean, he had a lot of inventions that proved it was possible. You have tons of patent documents out there for years for, you know, cold fusion devices and all this stuff. But every time somebody seems to come up with one of these things, and I'm not kidding you, I've read probably at least 20 stories on my show for the past 6 years, through the years, that have been scattered around where somebody, I'll read a story 1 week of some new free energy device coming out. And the next week I'll read a story about, you know, some doctor finding, you know, a one-shot cancer cure. And it'll be 2 weeks or a month later, I'll read another story, you know, doctor that discovered, you know, unlimited energy device, and, you know, he couldn't live anymore and he hung himself. Doctor that discovered, you know, cancer cure, she didn't want to live anymore, so she hung herself. I mean, you just see this over and over and over again. And going back to what we've been talking about tonight, especially looking at the ancient civilizations and ancient cultures, and as I described earlier in the rock wall, this piezoelectrical energy that is found also in the Serpent Mound. You also have harmonic energy devices being found in Egypt. It seems that in the past, there was some sort of access to energy that could be created strictly from the vibrational frequencies of the human voice, combining with rock and crystalline structures. This is why these ancient megalithic temples are created out of very specific minerals and materials, and the rest is they're made out of these materials because of their ability to resonate when hit with frequencies. And these wow. frequencies can produce everything from out-of-body experiences on the low side to energy movement and energy transports, much in the same way that Nikola Tesla did with his wireless energy, where he was broadcasting that from point A to point B. And also, I think, applications and whatnot that we haven't even gotten to yet, such as being able to harness this energy, whatever it is, and actually create physical plane life forms out of it. This is depicted in the Temple of Hathor at Dendera, and there are pictures of that in my film as well.
Wouldn't it be nice to know what was in that library at Alexandria before it was destroyed? That could have yielded some good things.
For somewhat what was there, but it's the same thing we talked about earlier with all this ancient knowledge. There was so much of that knowledge that was dangerous to the power structure getting out to the people. And I think undoubtedly, while it was said to be destroyed under the guise of this, religious thing, it really, in the end of the day, had to do with this not getting out to the people. Because in Alexandria, that information was available to all people. And I think that that was a very dangerous thing for its time.
You have also involved yourself in government corporate corruptions and occult esoteric philosophies. We discussed a little bit of that tonight. But, as long as I started it, and I'm happy that maybe you can help me finish it, and that is mass media propaganda and its contribution to social engineering. I did not mean to imply earlier that I was a huge Fox News fan. I just find them less nauseating than the others, basically. And that's where I am with that. I don't trust any what I would call an official news outlet. I don't. It's just what you've been saying all night. Do your own research and look at it. When I see some people covering a story like this Benghazi screw up, and I see other people, other organizations not giving it very much play, this suggests things to me, such as, wow, they still look like a propaganda arm of whatever government happens to be running things that they support. So where are we? In your opinion, with mass media propaganda, it appears transparently so more by the day.
Well, it absolutely is, and when you go back and look at old news clips or my last couple of films I made, The Secret Right, Volume 1 and 2, in those films I went back and was going through old news archives clips and buying footage from news archives to use. And one of the things that, John, that struck me when I was watching these clips, and news, and a lot of it was like ABC News stuff from the 80s that I remembered as a kid, and as you mentioned earlier, Iran-Contra. And, it was just unbelievable to me how much more intelligent that the news was 20, 30 years ago, which is really not a long time ago. But when you go back and you watch these clips, it's unbelievable. You watch it, and you're like, wow, they're actually giving you real information here. You watch the news now, and it's just, either some way to propagandize you, some way to make you scared and in fear, and to fear even going outside and fearing your neighbors and everything else. It's become the most powerful tool for manipulation and control ever unleashed on mankind. And as I've said before, the only way you combat that is to use that same media for the opposite purpose. Shows like what you do, John, what I do. It's going to take people who aren't controlled by these corporate factions starting their own news for the people and taking it to the people in order for people to become informed, because the news is not there to inform you. Their control system and their books are not there to inform you. They're there to program you and to keep you controllable. If we take the reins back for ourselves and reclaim our own intelligence and reclaim our own belief systems, we won't be controlled anymore. But as it is now, all they have to do is, drop one thing on the news to get people riled up about, and immediately you will have people take a side on that. And at the end of the day, it always is something that is used for divide and conquer. They want to keep us fighting against each other, so we never look at them to see where the real problem is.
Yeah, the tendency is when you criticize the current politician, president, well, usually, because he's the figurehead, he's the head guy, so he gets the heat. It becomes an emotional thing. What happened in prior administrations is largely beyond our control. We will have to deal with the effects of that, but as we've discussed many times, and I personally have submitted many times, the agenda moves forward. The party that happens to be in power is just a difference in style. The agenda still goes forward. And it's an American problem. It's not a left or a right problem.
Absolutely.
And I think when we're pushed enough, I think that we'll find a lot of common ground. It's just, why is it necessary to let it get to that point? It's a lot more fun arguing among ourselves than trying to you know, combat some juggernaut of a government seizure of everything that we've ever known to be normal, and anything that ever made us feel like we were actually living in a free society. That's not good, and things seem to be ramping up because of the internet and so forth. I think it would have been a lot more noble if our chief executive had said, listen, you hear a lot of these conspiracy theories out there, but the thing is, that's okay. Investigate them, and you'll find that we are still the same brave, trustworthy, our experiment bunch that we always have been. We subscribe to these ideals, and we want to roll with them, but instead it's like, turn away from anyone who would dare suggest that we're not on the level. I mean, who would say something like that anyway? I don't understand it. That's what I mean.
It echoes of, you know, to me, I was just hearing, you know, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists all over again. I mean, that's when I heard those statements made by Obama, that's what I heard. And, you know, for me, when I first started.
Oh, that was Bush.
Bush. But when I was on air, when I first started on air, Bush was in office. Everybody called me a left winger then. And as soon as Obama got in office, everybody started calling me a right winger. So, you know, that's the thing, is you have to let people know when you talk about this stuff that you're not blaming the puppet master that's put in front of you in the predetermined choice. You're going after the root of the problem itself. And that's the people that actually control these puppets that are rolled out to us for public consumption.
Well, you're absolutely that's well put. The person standing there is just the symptom. It's not the disease is what we're looking for, not just the symptom. Yeah, it's interesting. Anytime a politician says, "Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain," I am the Great Oz. Don't go over there and bother. Like, oh, they pull the curtain back. We need to always pull the curtain back. Always, yes.
I couldn't agree more, John. That's what I'm doing this for. I mean, anytime somebody tells me that not to pull the curtain back, well, you know how that goes. Makes you want to pull more.
No, absolutely, positively. What do you say we take a call? You want to?
Absolutely.
Let's take one. Wildcard line number 2, Desiree in Los Angeles.
Hi, John. It's a big pleasure to finally be able to speak with you. Long-time listener.
Well, it's mutual, I'm sure.
Hello to your guest, and my question for him is, you know that Ancestry.com is offering that offer for $99 to be able to test your DNA?
Yep.
And my question to your guest is, what is his opinion on that? Is it a good thing, or do you think it's just a way of trying to keep track of this bloodline that he was talking before?
Are you
coming from?
Yeah, is your DNA going to be databased? I mean, are you wondering about that? I gotcha.
Yes.
That's a good question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I would say personally, here's the way I look at this. As I stated earlier, you know, you don't always want to look for a conspiracy behind everything that's just as dangerous as ignoring stuff that's right in front of you. But I do relate to what you're saying there as far as not wanting to willfully give up your DNA to anyone for any purpose. And I believe that 100% is the right thing to do. I've read story after story through the years of DNA collection, mandatory DNA collection. They are trying to catalog and database DNA of every people out there. And one of the reasons is because of something called race-specific bioweapons. You can look this up. They talk about this in their own documents. And that's why they want to collect everybody's DNA, so that they can create race-specific bioweapons that only wipe out certain races in the population. So to answer
extraordinary.
Your question, that's why 100%
unbelievable.
For me, that's why I would not give up your DNA right there.
Josh, you rock. Josh Reeves is with us tonight, and we will return for our final segment in a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. You know what I love about the Coast to Coast AM audience? Well, first of all, they're the best listeners on this or any other planet. 2-3 emails have come in, and it really tickles me when this happens. A lot of times I'll start saying something, and really it would be a little bit more coherent if I were the one being interviewed. so I could just take over and ramble for a long time, which I kind of try to do sometimes anyway. But I've got 2-3 emails here where people have said, you know, at first I heard those comments, and I was just outraged, and then I listened a little bit longer, Then heard something else. I listened a little bit longer. I heard something else. I'm beginning to think you may have something there. And I've completely supported this administration up until I keep hearing little things that make me, first, it hits me on an emotional level, and then it hits me on a rational level. And so, yeah, you're right. It's not a left or right issue. It's an American issue. And yes, it is an American issue. Talking about that DNA databasing, this is from the LA Times. The dangers of DNA databases, the dangers of growing DNA databases. At the time of the decision, UK databases included more than 4.5 million DNA profiles in the UK, more than 5% of the population. That's from April 9th, 2010. FBI and states vastly expand DNA databases, New York Times. That's from 09. Well, it's 2013. So I wonder how much progress has been made, whether you knew you were being databased or not, between 09 and 2013. I suspect quite a lot. Isn't it something? It seems so innocuous. It seems so benign. It seems almost beneficent. But no, it's a database, and you're in it. Final segment and your calls as well on Coast to Coast AM in just a moment. Do stand by. Tommy Wells in with you tonight. Our guest is Josh Reeves, and he's a first-time guest. You know, back in the Stone Age, almost 50 years ago, Bob Cummings, the actor Bob Cummings, was the star of a show called Love That Bob. And his little slogan was, I think you're going to like this picture, because he was a professional photographer. And I'll tell you, I think you're going to like this picture too, the film, The Lost Secrets of Ancient America. It will absolutely just expand your head like a balloon. Josh Reeves' website is theglobalreality.com. You know, I suppose it's pretty easy to answer this, the following question with, well, it's because they want control, but, yeah, I know they do. Have you given much thought? I know you have. So, what are your thoughts on social networking like Facebook? Zuckerman's making money, but the people have become so emotionally invested in that if you decide there's a little bit too much personal information out there and you take your site down and you run into one of them, they'll say, you defriended me. No, I took the site down. No, you defriended me. Nothing personal. It was just, I mean, people have really become addicted to this thing. And I'm wondering if it's a, go ahead. I mean, I think it's as dangerous as databasing the DNA almost.
Well, I think that, I think the thing about it is it's just like any other technology, John. I mean, you know, we can use these technologies for our own advantage against them without having to give up all of our information. And the problem is that the norm is just to, submit all of your information and not think twice about it. And I saw a cartoon this week that really summed this up perfectly. It was just a one little cell cartoon in the newspaper, and it had two aliens sitting in a spaceship, and it said, you know, we don't have to probe these guys anymore. They give up all their information willingly to us now on Facebook. That was such a great commentary. You know, I mean, it's true. It is. You know, they don't have to probe us anymore. We give it up to them.
Well, it's really true, isn't it? All of your grocery store cards. Everybody wants an email. You know, could we have your email? Oh, sure. And then you wind up on 200 lists, and now you're getting all kinds of things on your iPhone that you didn't really plan on. You know. That's amazing. Well, you know, we've got about 15 minutes here. What would you like to leave us with? And, you know, we'll take a couple more calls. But, I mean, I guess I'm just saying let it all hang out. Anything that you want to say that I haven't asked you about or hadn't come up yet, let it rip.
Well, I hope that people will we really didn't even, you know, you can't even scratch the surface with 3 hours about this stuff. I mean, even I did a film of 3.5 hours, and really this is just the beginning of it. But this Rockwall thing has the potential, because of the evidence that's been gathered so far. I mean, it was covered in a catastrophic flood event. The soil analysis shows beyond any shadow of a doubt that the Rockwall was covered in a catastrophic flood event about 12,000 years ago. And this corresponds with, you know, of course, the Great Flood happening and all the rest of this. But what's fascinating is that after this period of time that elapsed, when civilization started rising again, It rose, as I mentioned earlier, back on the 33rd degree parallel yet again. And there is an ancient tablet. It's in a museum in England. It's called the Sumerian King List, and this was once in the possession of J.P. Morgan. And this highly regarded artifact details a 432,000-year reign of these what are called Anunnaki gods. And that's the key thing, is that there is evidence that these Anunnaki talked about in the ancient Mesopotamian texts were here in the United States, or at least someone who was from that culture. The evidence is there. You'll see that detailed in my film. The most interesting thing is that our country was founded on the knowledge of the fact that there were these ancient civilizations here way back in antiquity. Sir Francis Bacon detailed in his book, The New Atlantis, that the New Atlantis would be built on the foundations of old, the New World, America. He detailed flying machines, skyscrapers, long before they ever existed, because they knew that there was a civilization here long before that, and they were trying to get back here to reset up the New Atlantis for the expansion of the British Empire. The rock wall dating puts the wall at anywhere from 20,000 on the low side to 200,000 on the high side. We have a coin found in a strata dating to 200,000 years in a well in Illinois that matches hieroglyphics found on a 2.5-ton garnet stone in rock wall, matches them to a T. Those pieces of evidence put us in the general area for this rock wall to be one of the eight cities ruled over throughout the world for a 432,000-year reign prior to the Great Flood, making this essentially what people know as Atlantis. The interesting thing about the rock wall, it was built, as I mentioned earlier, it's leveled 550 feet above sea level, and it was built in 3.5 feet of seawater. And when excavations were done on the wall, they found shark's teeth embedded into the wall and found fresh sand dollars that still had fresh meat in them that had been preserved in the water under the ground from all of this soil and impact and overburden that came over the wall and covered it in this catastrophic event 12,000 years ago. So if people want to know more about the lost secrets of ancient America, they want to know more about the rock wall, again, as you mentioned, they can go to my website, beagleboreality.com. They can get the film. And it's more detailed than we can go in here, too. And we're hoping to do a volume two to travel to more new sites. We're hoping to acquire enough funds to be able to have our own archaeological dig of the rock wall. Also, possibly at some other rock wall type sites that I have located as well in the United States. We're hoping to try to get something going there. And, you know, it's just important that those of us who are willing to take this upon ourselves to do it, because it's not going to happen if we don't. We can sit around, as I said earlier, and gripe about what the powers that be do. But at the end of the day, how much are they to blame for all this, and how much are we to blame if we don't decide for ourselves to at least try and do something about it? And that's what I'm trying to do with this film, John, and with all of this work. And I'm glad that we got to talk about a wide variety of things here on the show tonight, because my work does not encompass just one end, and this has all been the result of years and years and years of research and dedicating myself to this. But I would be nothing without the people out there who are of like mind and want to see the same type of things that I do and want to uncover these things. So people
and there are more
to my website, and they can support our work there.
The thing about it is, I was just thinking more and more people are waking up to this all the time. I've just gotten five emails that are from our friends in Canada. And three of them have asked that you try and get it on Canadian iTunes so they can download.
Well, that just takes money. And if people donated to our work, our Indiegogo campaign for volume two is going on at my website right now, or buy a copy. If everybody out there buys a copy, that'll give us the money to do that. But unfortunately, it costs $1,500 or $2,000 to get your movie up on iTunes and Netflix and all that. And if we have the money to be able to do that eventually, we will. But Canadian listeners can go to my website and download the digital copies there that are in MP4 format, same as you would get from iTunes, and they can download them directly from my website.
Well, there you go. There you go, Canada. Say, Stephen sent an email that says, are we not all related if we go back far enough? That's an interesting question. I think maybe he's picking up on a report some months ago that they found Neanderthal genetic components inside regular people walking around, and vice versa, suggesting that what became the human being that we know of now actually cross-pollinated, shall we say, with actual Neanderthals back in the day. So if you say, wow, such and such is, he's such a Neanderthal, it's like, well, that's right, he actually is one. You know, he's made a Neanderthal stuff. So I'm wondering, I wonder how closely related we are. I wonder if you can really boil it down to Adam and Eve, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a clip in the film of this news clip for, I think it was CNN or one of the news stations, where they were talking about this DNA analysis that was done on King Tutankhamun and found that there a large percentage of modern-day Europeans have a bloodline ancestry that is related to King Tutankhamun, even though he lived a short amount of time, and only something like a very, very, very small percentage of modern-day Egyptians share that same DNA. So one of the things I show in the film is the migration patterns of the Canaanite, Amorite, Phoenician giants. I show their migration patterns throughout the world and show how they, you know, basically change all the bloodlines of those areas. And yeah, at the end of the day, I guess you could say that we're all the same. But as we talked about earlier with the bloodlines, there's something different about this that's revered depending upon what family you come from. The Boston bombing suspect that was killed, Tarsnev, his widow, she's a great example of one of these bloodlines. If you want to know why you should question the Boston bombings, this is it, and this is it alone. The widow of Tarsnev, her grandfather is a Russell. She is a Russell bloodline. Look up the Russell Trust. Look up the Russell bloodline. Do research into them. Look at what they've been involved in. The Russell Trust was the founders of the Skull and Bones fraternity at Yale. They have been one of the most important bloodline families in the Illuminati and in the world power structure for years. And for them to have their fingerprints all over this Boston thing tells us exactly what we suspect to be true to be true.
All right, Coasters, you heard that. So look into this. Look into, we talking Tamarin, his widow?
Yes.
The older brother. His widow's related to the Russells. And did you say they founded Skull and Bones?
Yes. The Russell Trust, which was founded by the Russell family, founded Skull and Bones at Yale, yes.
Good grief. Do you see what I'm talking about? When you watch this, just the DVD... Just the DVD, the Lost Secrets of Ancient America. I'm telling you, it'll blow your head up. Was that an NSA code word? Am I in trouble?
Probably so, John.
Oh man! Hey, is Joseph still there? We got a few minutes here. Is Joseph still there? He's a first-time caller. He's in Ohio. Says Berlin Center.
Yes. Hello, John. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Doing well. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I've always appreciated your program, by the way, because you tend to accentuate civil liberties, and I think that is very much needed in today's society. The reason I called had to do with mound-building natives here in Ohio, but I do appreciate the civil liberties emphasis that you often have on your program.
Well, thank you. I try to keep it under control, but it ain't easy in these times. Anyway. Well,
yes, that's true. And, you know, the comment that we shouldn't be too hasty to run to conspiracy theories, even though I think given the times that might be the better course sometimes. I think, too, a lot of times we often have a tendency to maybe run to the aliens as a solution to things we see and do or see and notice in history. And in culture, and I don't think necessarily we should ascribe everything to the aliens. I think we underrate the intellect of our ancient ancestors, and just simply because they didn't have electric toasters didn't mean they weren't intelligent. And I do believe they've accomplished a good amount of wonderful cultural, religious, mythological, all these monuments and aspirations and philosophies that our modern society doesn't seem to have the time for to study and as they had. The ancient peoples here in Ohio, back in 1996, I went to all the different mounds, and I'm an artist, and I'm also a teacher of humanities and so forth, and so I was very much interested in early prehistoric culture here in Ohio most of my life. And so
you got to go quickly because we're running out of show. Anyway, what happened then?
Okay. Well, just in studying the petroglyphs and the mounds and that type of thing, I came to the conclusion that the early historic Indians coming into Ohio may have encountered a superior race of people who were very well developed. And we're talking about the mound builders, Adina Hopewell. They were quite developed themselves, but they encountered a very early group of people during the glacial age. And this is very interesting that your guest should mention this about the giants. But
hey, listen, thanks for staying on hold for so long. I really appreciate your call. Can you relate to any of this, Josh?
Yeah, I can. And he's right on the money with as far as, you know, the mound builders in Ohio. We talked about that earlier. But here's the main thing I want to comment on what he said real quick. The thing where, you know, we don't have to take it to the alien thing, that, et cetera. I agree with that, but I think the problem stems from the fact that we are thinking about aliens as little green men flying in flying saucers instead of thinking about them as people just like ourselves. And I think when people do that and learn that, they'll find a lot of truth in it.
All right, so you're working on volume two, I take it.
Well, hopefully, if we reach our funding goal to have a budget to make the film, yes. If not, no. But that's just going to be all up to the listening audience. But I do have a lot planned. A lot of it I won't talk about because they have stolen stuff I've done so far and try to turn it into TV shows that don't quite give you the whole truth. So I kind of be careful about what I mention. But yes, volume two is going to be even more deep and more inclusive than volume one. It's going to go even deeper, so I'm excited about it.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the program tonight, and let's plan to have you come back on as more revelations occur to you. And thanks again for being here. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, John. It's a real pleasure for me to be here, and you're a brave man for having me on. I appreciate it.
I don't know about that, but I don't think I'm a coward either. At least I don't think I am. Thanks, Josh. Thanks very much. All right, then. You know, adventure. That's what Josh Reeves was on, and that's what we're on together. All of us here at Coast to Coast AM, and all of you there on Coast to Coast AM. So have an adventure, big or small. Do not despise small beginnings. If it'll work for the mice, maybe it'll work for us. Talk to you on Friday. I'll be sitting in for Ship's Captain George Norrie for some naked lines and who knows what else. Said it before and I'll say it again. It's been a pleasure. Until next Friday night and beyond, good night and be well.